And that can only mean one thing. That means you're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Yes, the High Spot Podcast hasn't changed like the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, or in this case, the WWE Championship. Alongside my tag team partner and one member of their Jersey Wrecking Crew, Jeff Martin, I am Brian Berga. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Jeff, first thing I want to dive into is like, it's... I like to say it's been a whirlwind of activity in the WWE, but not really. I mean, we got the draft slowly approaching, and we're still on this whole Roman Reigns suspension thing, but the thing I want to talk to you about is the inactivity or the inability to watch Monday Night Raw nowadays. It's a three-hour show. You would think, as we've said time and time again, there'd be so much more content on there. I mean, what do you say when you look at a Raw that we just saw? And basically nothing was leading to the pay-per-view leading up, which is Battleground.
Brian, first and foremost, before I get to the bad news, I just want to say, how are you doing today, bud?
You could tell from this tone of my voice, I am not doing that well.
Are you as frustrated as I am frustrated right now? Because this is the second straight week that I cannot get through Raw, and I've literally fallen asleep. Now, usually I can tolerate it, but no. Last 2 weeks, and I'm like, whoa, what happened? Frustrating.
Your guess is as good as mine what's going on. The only thing that I did tend to find out, as I alluded to in the intro, is that they're doing little subtle tendencies now with the brand split coming up eventually July 19th, is that now Dean Ambrose is now called, or they dub him as the WWE champion. So what does that say to all of us? Oh, wow, they actually are going to separate the titles now, because when they were unified, it was the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Now, we only have the WWE champion. So there's no question now there are going to be two major titles. Do you still call it the World Championship?
Most likely that's what it's going to be.
Do you retire the same belt that you retired before? Do you bring back the old one, you know, that looked like in WCW time?
Well, that's a great question. I think, like we were telling you before, off air actually, I was thinking, you remember when The Rock came out with the first concept of this new WWE Championship? And it didn't have the red as far as the swoosh that goes around the WWE. It was all like metallic gold. I think that's what they should come out with. They should have that one be the World Heavyweight Champion. Because I think that the WCW version, I think it's just like run its course.
Yeah, I think so too. It's run its course. But, you know, if you do what you suggested and bring back that type of title, do you need that type of distinction between brands? I'll grant it has the gigantic WWE emblem logo on it. But do you need it to be that drastic of a difference?
I don't think it's as drastic. I think it's just the color that's filled in with the...
No, I'm saying, do you need a drastic difference in title to distinguish the two shows? Because you can easily see those two titles mirror each other, just because one's a little bit more metallic gold and the other one's gold with the red stripes on it and the plates. Do you need different titles to distinguish the different brands?
You know, honestly, to this point, I would think that it's under the same brand. So if you had just that slight subtlety as far as the titles, I think that would be okay. I don't think you have to go major and make it really its own separate entity, although they want to do that. As far as the titles, I think you should just leave it alone and just a little bit of distinguishing with the colors, and that's about it.
Yeah. Well, something about Raw that I actually enjoyed, and again, we could talk about this further as the draft approaches. Unfortunately, Jeff, it's going to happen.
Because it looks like that's what they're waiting for till the draft before they even move on with anything on Raw.
They're waiting for the draft, it seems like, to distinguish who's going to be general managers, I guess, if that matters. I mean,
Operating officers, I think. It's not general managers now. They've made it a point where it's not going to be GMs.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'm lazy, and I'm going to call them general managers because officers, it doesn't go with me.
Chief operating officers, so the COOs?
Yep.
I can't believe they're doing that, too. Well, that just throws it for a loop, just like when the opening segment came on for Raw, in which it's something, I don't know about you, Jeff, but I start to kind of dread a little bit because a lot of it's all talk. Never rarely do we see action happen immediately or just something last less than 20 or a half hour segment, which I guess you need to now because it's 3 hour Raw. You have Seth Rollins coming out to an enormous cheer. And addressing the whole Roman Reigns suspension.
Which I was surprised, Brian. I really was, because prior to that, I was telling you, no way they addressed it. And I was calling everybody on Twitter, everyone stupid, because this is the WWE. It's too real. They're not going to address it. But they did.
Yeah, it would kind of not make sense if they didn't address it, because this is something you can't just sweep under the carpet, because believe it or not, and I'm not going to be one complaining right now, but a lot of people are going to be noticing that Roman Reigns is not on TV. And there needs to be an explanation. You can't say, oh, he's injured or he's on, you know, family leave, whatever.
Which
they had
I
to address
they could
it.
Have. They might have addressed that he was hurt or something, but no, they didn't. They chose to go full steam ahead and address the injury. Well, sort of. We'll get to that.
Well, I like the way Seth Rollins came out. He basically came out and attacked and trashed Roman Reigns. And in all sense, he wasn't shooting at Roman Reigns, but basically addressing his tweet where he owned it. He apologized to his family and yada, yada, yada. And then Dean Ambrose comes out, defends his buddy.
And that's the problem, Bri. Because, like you said, like they had Roman Reigns. He was a shade of gray because he was either good or bad. He was the guy. They do the same thing. They could have just had Seth Rollins bury Roman Reigns, do the heel thing. But what happens? The face comes out, the champion comes out, and he defends his friend. We all make mistakes. And totally nullifies anything that Seth Rollins said.
And the way he came out, said, hey, we all make mistakes, and that's it, as if it's not a big deal. I mean, and granted, the way we're not going to go on a debate. It's like, is it a big deal or is it not a big deal that he failed the wellness policy? And we still have yet to find out how he actually failed it. I'm sure they'll keep the sealed nice and tight, but usually eventually always comes out why it happens. But what a move by the WWE in terms of, okay, well, we're gonna bash him and then we're going to nullify it this way. And so now let's move on. Okay, really? We're just moving on now from it? We're not going to address it any longer?
They had a perfect opportunity, Bri, for Dean Ambrose. Even if you just said, yeah, I'm a little disappointed in Roman. That's fine. I think we have to hear from Roman when he comes back. And then Roman would have been able to speak his mind, whether it would have been a heel promo or do something. But no, they nullified all Seth Rollins did, which was so-so, because it was to be comedic. And then Dean Ambrose just could have been like, well, we'll hear from Roman Reigns, but they didn't. They didn't do it. They nullified it.
They basically treated it as a comedic segment. The only exciting part of that, eventually, once there's the altercation between Seth and Dean, AJ Styles comes out, crowd's excited, who knows, because everybody's thinking maybe Roman Reigns is now theoretically out of the triple threat match at Battleground. AJ now is putting his hat in there. Then John Cena comes out and ruins everything and puts his hat in there. And then Stephanie comes out, who addresses the fact that Shane McMahon's on vacation. Who cares?
And ruins it even more, but just coming out. And again, why? Why do we need to know he's on vacation? We already know he doesn't give a damn about the show anyways, so he's on vacation. Oh, my God.
It just makes no sense. I mean, when has Vince McMahon ever been on vacation? When has the authority at Perte had been on vacation? They have had the day off, but they've never been on a way extended period of time. So I don't know what they're doing with having Shane run it for a certain amount of time and maybe Stephanie running for a certain amount of time, I guess, to kind of show the differences in styles and the dynamics. But again, to me, this whole angle between Stephanie and Shane and the sibling rivalry could have been done completely different, Jeff. We can continue on that, too, if we wanted to. But at the same time, I think it has ultimately failed. And I can't just wait for the brand split to happen, because now both can be on separate entities. And now I think the big question remains, where's Triple H falling into all this?
It's got to be with NXT, I believe. It's got to be with his brand NXT. He's got to find a way somehow to interject. I just don't see him and Stephanie running SmackDown or even Raw, because we've seen it. We've already seen it before, you know? If NXT is going to have any say or is going to be make an impact in this draft, I think Triple H has to spearhead it. He has to.
Now, does he spearhead it coming alongside and defending his wife and trying to gain control and taking Shane out of the equation? Or, like you said, comes up with NXT saying, I have a third solution to whatever crisis we're having with the new era type of thing?
Because SmackDown is 2 hours, I think that this draft and thinking about it, I think that the depth is really going to hurt Raw. So I think they're going to need something for Raw. So I think that the first hour, it should be a rivalry between Shane and Triple H. And that way they battle somehow on Raw. And Steph just has SmackDown, which is going to be the wrestling brand anyways. So that's, to me, I think the best idea is Shane and Triple H.
Shane and Triple H, right? But do you see in this whole situation going on leading to Battleground, and then after Battleground is SummerSlam, Seth Rollins somehow working his way in the fold? Because there have been rumors now going around that they originally wanted to turn him face. They wanted to explore that avenue with him. They did a little bit when he was with the Shield, and the Shield had turned face. Do you see Triple H in a Seth Rollins going out at WrestleMania, or just makes no sense storyline-wise for that to happen? Unless Triple H
SummerSlam or WrestleMania?
Sorry, not SummerSlam. My mistake. SummerSlam, not WrestleMania, for Seth Rollins and Triple H.
I think there's a chance to get Triple H and Shane build up to Mania, but to me, I guess it's a wait and see till we get to the draft itself and see what they want to do with the championship and with Seth Rollins and Triple H.
Championships. We're discussing the different championships that are going to be on Raw and SmackDown, but can you give me the ability as a fan, Jeff, to watch the United States title, and the more importantly, the Intercontinental title defended. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on this whole Rusev reign now, but you know, his altercations with Kalisto, which could have been a good match, didn't really end up being that way storyline-wise. Now with Titus O'Neil, I mean, give me a break. Those have been brutal matches to watch. They've tried to involve some type of things being personal to make it more intriguing. It hasn't worked. And the Intercontinental Champion, our Intercontinental Champion, has been away for how long?
Shooting a crappy WWE movie again. And the title, which actually had some steam at Extreme Rules, where actually it looked like people gave a damn about it. Nothing, man. Just 30 days of crap. And then we watch. And I'm very pissed off because this is going to be a pissed off show today because I'm normally like, well, Brian, you know, let's give it. No. They need to be reamed for this one because how is it that you have a chance, you know, for something new to happen? Have a mystery challenger for the Intercontinental title and it's Kane? Oh, my God. I love Kane. I think he's a Hall of Famer. Think he was great at one point. Think he was a great gimmick. But really? Kane against The Miz?
I seriously thought it was going to be Darren Young. And the reason why is because they did vignette before Miz came out about him talking to Bob Backlund, we're going to make Darren Young great again. Again, I don't like to acknowledge this little campaign they do with making the whole Darren Young great again with Bob Backlund. But again, it made sense because in the last vignette, he talked about how he wanted to be an individual champion because there have been tag team champions. You were thinking maybe the mystery opponent is Darren Young, and not that Darren Young is so much greater an option from Kane, but at least Darren Young made sense.
New era, maybe?
I have no idea. But to bring Kane back, and like you said, he's a Hall of Famer, but I think he served his time. The corporate Kane back and forth with the Demon Kane, it just doesn't work anymore. And especially for a title and The Miz, I mean, you really couldn't pick anybody else to come in there to challenge The Miz for
all the momentum that they lost from Extreme Rules. If you knew that The Miz was not going to be there, how does that help the Intercontinental title?
How does it help your overall product? You make him the champion, which, again, him being the champion with Maurice was a great combination
no
like we talked
whatsoever.
About.
Best but work he's done in a while.
Why would you take him off TV if your main goal is to put him on TV? Yeah, he had a movie obligation. Again, then take the title off him and have him come back and reclaim it because, hey.
Who cares? Who cares how many times you lose it, right?
They yeah, it flip-flops like crazy. I don't understand why you would do that. But again, it sounds like bitter grapes, but it is kind of bitter grapes because from a booking standpoint, from a fan standpoint, it just doesn't make any sense why you would not do something like that.
Yeah, just another reason to be angry, another reason why Raw for those 3 hours is just, it's just become tough to watch. It really has, man. It really has been terrible. And we're talking about the draft. Brian, think about this, man. You know, they already have enough talent to book 3 hours, but now they're going to cut the roster in half and have one half just property to SmackDown, the other one to Raw. What are they going to do? What are they going to do to fill that time?
In theory, you think it makes sense because you have now the ability to showcase other talent, but they've had a terrible time showcasing the limited roster they had when all the injuries occurred prior to WrestleMania to showcase new talent. And in my opinion, they've done a very terrible job at doing that because they've had the inability of combining not only action within the ring and progressing storylines, but all has been the cookie cutter of funny backstage segments, which, okay, they serve their purpose. But again, now you're going to have a depleted roster on Raw. If you're still going to keep it 3 hours, is it going to get any better?
No, I doubt it. And do you trust the WWE to make it better? No. I bet you they're going to invest in this in a couple weeks, and then it's going to go, it's probably a good idea, and it's going to be for naught. And but I'm telling you, man, in a year and a half or so, the brands are going to come back together.
Yeah, only time will tell, and unfortunately, we have to kind of go through this process again because it wasn't great the first time we went through it during the draft selection. Maybe business-wise, it made sense in terms of selling merch and, you know, having WWE travel more around the world and be more exclusive to other territories, you know, when the old days in terms of territories. But it doesn't work now because you're not fooling anybody. And the track record that WWE's had in terms of promoting young talent and able to showcase them on a grander stage hasn't really worked. They haven't had a good track record so far, as to say. But, you know, speaking of something that to me I was looking forward to watching and saw a little bit of was, you know, we talk about the WWE being the entire world, right? Well, you know, there are other promotions that exist outside of the WWE, and one of them is something that you and I, we intend to like too, similar to maybe the diehardness that we watch NXT for, is Ring of Honor.
Yeah, had a great show this past Friday. And
best in the world.
Yeah, amazing.
Well, great title for a pay-per-view, right?
Yeah.
And in your main event which we saw the promos to this, and this is something which I always feel, Jeff, is a dying art in pro wrestling, where, you know, the conviction of the promo, of what they're saying, the believability is there. And you saw that in Jay Lethal, the champion, going up against
Jay Briscoe for the title. And again,
a rematch a year in the making.
Yeah, and Jay Lethal, again, proved that he is Ring of Honor champion, and it looks like they're leading up to a matchup with Adam Cole, and that for me, as a wrestling fan, I'm excited for. I can't wait to see that, and just good things coming up for Jay Lethal. I mean, clearly, if that's a guy that I want to target, if there's a guy that I'm looking at, it's going to be Jay Lethal. In the future, if I'm WWE, that's a guy I look at, because that's a guy that's done it every single way. Started out at TNA, then he started doing the Macho Man, then he did the Ric Flair gimmick, and now he's doing, showing you why he is one of the very best in the world, hence the pay-per-view, and a great match with Jay Briscoe and Jay Lethal doing his thing, and I'm looking forward to seeing him and Adam Cole go at it pretty soon.
Yeah, Adam Cole, newest member of the Bullet Club, now going up against Jay Lethal. Who knows where that will lead? Only time will tell on that aspect, but looking forward to that type of storyline and angle continuing on. And like you said, Jay Lethal has proven time and time again through his times in TNA and all the in promotions he's worked with that he's very multi-talented, and he's like a chameleon. He can adapt to any single
That's a great comparison.
Yeah, he can adapt to any type of position he's put in, and whatever he does, he commits 120%, even though most might say the Macho Man gimmick was kind of cheesy, he took it to its full extent and made it really good, actually, and actually worked and ran with it. Another thing, too, that we talked about, the dying art of the promos, the dying art of building a storyline, which if you lacks in the WWE, Jeff, you brought up to me, was the return of Steve Corino.
Yep.
Who we haven't seen in the ring for quite some time, going against BJ Whitmer. And if you hadn't seen the match, just to see the buildup to this kind of sold me on it, Jeff. I want you to explain more, because you first came up to me and said, Brod, you got to check this out. And well, I looked at it and I was like, wow, that's pretty good.
But basically, it's realism. It's kind of, if you take the gimmick with DDP when he was stalking Sarah, the Undertaker's wife, and you actually put some reality in, you didn't make it corny like they did, and they took it as far as they took it personal. Steve Corino came out of retirement to do this matchup. And then just the realism, just, you know, WWE was never going to use blood. It's going to be a while before they ever do it, if they ever do it. But the fact, just the promo and just Steve Corino selling it, and just him personally with his promo, showing the realism and just on both guys doing a tremendous job in the lead up. And you wanted to see this. And you know what? Hey, they went stiff, man. They took some tough blows, and then, you know, you saw the blood. And it was just a great match, and it took you back to the 90s, you know. And we're not trying to live back in the past, although Brian always tends to be, Jeff, you're living in the past way too much, you know. But you know what?
And I've been a victim of that sometimes,
too. Just the reality is just leaves you wow, because at the end of the day, you want to think that wrestling, there is some part of realism to it, you know, because at the end of the day, you know that these guys are, you know, putting on performance for us, the fans. But, I mean, just this was great. And then Kevin Sullivan showing up was a great finality to the match, costing Steve Corino the match. Just well done by Ring of Honor. If you want to see wrestling, you're going to watch Ring of Honor. If you want to see wrestling, you're going to tune in on Wednesday night to NXT. If you want to, maybe if you have insomnia and you want to and you need to sleep, you're going to put on Monday Night Raw, because right now that's where it is right now. It's the cure for the common insomnia.
Yeah, if your ratings are dropping on Raw, it seems like SmackDown's increasing a little bit, so we'll see how that leads up during the brand split. And like I said, Ring of Honor, Steve Corino, somebody who I always felt I saw a lot of his work in ECW, is kind of, I think, a little bit underrated in terms of what he can do. Granted, he wasn't the most gifted to have the most amazing body, the amazing look, as most people would say, that you need to have in professional wrestling or sports entertainment. But Steve Corino, best thing he could do, he could sell, and he could draw people to see it, which they did in the storyline, which was beautifully done, I felt, and makes us reflect back to the days where, you know, this is what it should be. As Paul Heyman would say, these two guys are going at each other. What's the reason? Okay. Now let's see it.
And real quick, you're talking about Paul Heyman. Really quick, basically, Paul Heyman challenged Donald Trump to a debate. Who do you think would have the better of that battle?
I just think, as much as I think Donald Trump does great in the debates by insulting people, I think Paul Heyman would own anybody in debate.
Oh, he would.
Paul Heyman has the ability to deal with people, especially when they're going chaotic. I mean, the guy's dealt with Vince McMahon how many times in arguments and come out the other side still alive. So I think he'd be fine with Donald Trump. And besides, Paul Heyman, and if we were to ever have him on the show, which is a goal of ours guys to have, he would just brutalize anybody. He would just take anything you think of and revert back and make you think, you know what? I was actually wrong in that statement.
But that's the beauty of Paul Heyman. Are you mad, though, as I am the last couple weeks on Raw, though? Are you mad? I mean, I can tell, you know, you're the even keel guy. You're the one that calms me down, too. But, like, aren't you a little just frustrated just, like, the way things are going? And you talk about being even more of a bore. You know, July 4th is coming up, you know? And that is going to be even more of a bore because, you know, they're not going to – that's going to be the lowest rated Raw they're expecting of the whole year. So, I mean, honestly, that's just a night you can just shut things down and just barbecue all night.
Well, that's what it looks like right now. And yeah, I am frustrated. I probably don't show my emotion as much as you do, but it's the thing that we're seeing right now where, like, hey, before you know it, SummerSlam's going to be here. And if this is what you're showing us right now, I just hate the ability I feel or the mindset that WWE has sometimes. So I feel like they can flip a switch and automatically, boom, now you'll be interested in it, which mostly happens around this time of year with a pay-per-view like SummerSlam coming up, which is the summer's version of WrestleMania. And as the events lead on, before you know it, we're going to have Survivor Series and the Royal Rumble. So, and this could be the downtime as we as wrestling fans dread because you have a lot of potential, a lot of ways you can go, but it seems like they're saving up for some reason. My question is, why are you saving it up?
Yeah, you're supposed to be planning for a year. Like you said, this is a dull moment. I don't think so. I mean, this is a time where you got the draft coming up. Make it more exciting, but hence, I don't think so.
And one more bit of news, too, that's been going out, that Roderick Strong, a 12-year veteran of Ring of Honor now, no longer going to re-sign with the company. So you like to think, oh, maybe he's going to New Japan. TNA has always been a theoretical option, but the way they're dealing financially and the issues that TNA has, who knows? Is NXT a good fit for him, do you think?
Oh, I think he'd be great at NXT. I think he's been great for Ring of Honor. I think it was a little bit surprising news, but I mean, he's been there a long time. I mean, over 12 years with Ring of Honor, wants to see if there's greener pastures. And you know what? Especially if the NXT guys are going to move up and they're going to get rated as it sounds like they're going to be, he'd be a great person to have for NXT.
And one more thing, Cruiserweight Classic coming up. They showed a lot of the weigh-ins, showed all the competitors going in there. Do you like the way they're promoting in terms of they're weighing them in? They're introducing the audience to these people as building up for this big event that's going to happen.
I'm not going to say that I know every single Cruiserweight. But you know what? I'm sold because Daniel Bryan is back and Mauro Ranallo will add legitimacy to that event.
I think he does great. I think he does the best job at play by play calling
and Daniel
for
Bryan,
MMA and for wrestling.
And this is Daniel Bryan's. This is in his realm. This is what he knows, the cruiserweight. So I think it's just going to be great. I think it's going to be fun. And like they said, Triple H said a brand. So maybe there's a cruiserweight brand, which is basically cruiserweight. So that's going to be interesting too.
A lot of interesting things going on, theoretically, not if you're watching Raw, but obviously around the world of professional wrestling, which we enjoy talking about. But again, other things interesting happening around is, you know, we're always monitoring the internet, checking things out, and things go viral in the blink of an eye. And before you know it, somebody tweets something out or puts that video and it goes crazy. Now, speaking of that, we've had a good friend, Jeff, that we've known for a good amount of time.
Yes, we have.
Named Aaron Gerber, and he is the father of the most popular little guy we've ever come to know now, Mini Thor.
The most popular 5-year-old around to date right now. And talk about scouting. Well, never too young to scout this kid's arm. I mean, this guy got to throw out the first pitch at Citi Field. Mini Thor, like you were saying, it's just an exciting time for him and his son.
Yeah, and we had the pleasure and privilege of having Aaron, proud papa, and little Mini Thor, Ashton Gerber, on the show and talk about what was going on and really go to the roots of where this all came from. Now, obviously, we know they're huge baseball fans, but then we asked Aaron. It was basically they were pitching outside, wanted to do a video because he'd be doing a lot of pictures of his son and where it all led to, and this is what Aaron had to say.
It all started, it went viral with your video that you guys were playing catch, and he's all in his, you know, Noah Syndergaard shirt. And, you know, just what happened after that?
Well, right now he plays second base. He played this year in machine pitch as a 4-year-old against 7- and 8-year-olds. So he was the youngest kid in the league by far. And he played every inning at second base, and basically, I mean, I think he made like 2 errors all season and was just throwing kids out left and right. So playing against kids that were 3 and 4 years older than him at second base, he did great. Probably by next year, he probably will be able to play shortstop. And, I mean, the goal for him is to, I guess, be a shortstop.
Well, with that being said, with the video, Aaron, I remember seeing that too, and I was looking at it, and I had to kind of take a second glance. I'm like, wait a minute, is that Aaron? And I was looking at it, and it was so cool. I decided to repost it on my Facebook account. But I had no idea that something like that would go so viral as it did. I mean, you're playing catch when he's pitching. I mean, it looks like he's got a pretty good arm, great location. Has he ever wanted to pitch at all besides playing second base and shortstop?
Well, he's already playing way above his age, so he's still in machine pitch, so they don't have pitching yet for kids. That's the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at like 9 years old, and he'll probably be playing in the 9-year-old league when he's 6, if everything keeps going the way it's going. Basically, the way I see it, he does have great mechanics for pitching. You guys know me, though, and I'm not that tall. So I don't expect him to be that tall. And, I mean, there's exceptions like Marcus Stroman, but there's not many exceptions. So the way I see it, scouts, unless he ends up throwing like 92, 93 somehow, scouts won't be looking at him as a pitcher. So, I don't even, unless, like I said, he's just out of this world with velocity at a young age, I'm not even going to waste his arm pitching it at the little league level. I just want him to practice playing up the middle.
I gotcha.
So, other times I would say you have your son and you're making him a Mets fan. And I'm like, Mets fan to a Mets fan, I'm like, what are you doing to the kid, right? But it actually paid off, though, because, the video went viral. And so how did the Mets come along in all of this?
How'd they contact you?
Yeah, how'd they get to you?
Well, I guess it was a perfect storm. Ashton, it's a coincidence that he has the same hair as Syndergaard. Ashton's been growing it since he was born. Like, he's never had a haircut. So he was growing it before, Syndergaard ever made the major leagues. So basically, you've got the fact that he has the same, the same exact hair. Then the fact that he just turned 5. Like, he turned 5 at the end of April. So, like, he's not even close to 5 and a half yet. So you've got the fact that he's got the hair. He can throw with that type of velocity and location at such a young age. He's a Mets fan, and then the fact that, Syndergaard's become the star that he is, and, with the hair, the 100 miles an hour and everything like that. So it kind of was a perfect storm of everything going together. And basically what happened was, last year I would post pictures of Ashton, dressed in Mets stuff with a glove on, and I would post a picture like on days that Syndergaard would pitch, and I would say, it's Thor day, and here's, little Thor moving on, big Thor. And basically, when this season started, I had friends that were like, oh, we can't wait to see, the little Thor pictures, when Syndergaard pitches and everything. So I kept doing it this year. And then I figured, I got to do something different now. How many pictures am I going to put up? So I made a video, and I got the Syndergaard shirt for him. And, he was throwing strikes, and you could hear the glove popping and everything.
From a pretty good distance, too.
Yeah, no, and, we made it, like, the street that we're on, the driveway is sloped down like a mound, and it's got the crack from the rubber. And, he perfectly positioned himself back at the rubber every time. So, like, he executed everything perfectly to make this work. And, we put it up, and then it just started going crazy.
So you head over there, and you got to be excited. Like, does Ashton, even know, what's going on at this moment? Or was it, when he went to Citi Field that he first realizes, wow, I'm gonna meet the Mets?
Tom, what do you think?
Good?
Yeah, they said, did you know what was going on when you got to meet everybody?
No.
So he played catch with DeGrom, with Syndergaard. You got a 5-year-old cute kid that you see on the field. Who did he? Any player gravitate to him more than anyone else? A specific player? Any cool story there?
Struble Cabrera. He really wanted to see Struble Cabrera bad, and So Struble finally came out. He came towards the field. He comes up the steps. So Cabrera, you know, when he's at bat, like, as the pitcher's, like, you know, getting his sign or whatever, Cabrera, like, has one fist towards his chest, and he points the bat out towards the pitcher. So as soon as Cabrera came up, Ashton, with his arm, like, pointed out like he had the bat in his hand, and he put his other fist towards his chest, and he did, and he mimicked Cabrera's, like, batting stance. And Cabrera came up and just started dying laughing, and he's like, hey, how's it going? And he gives Ashton five and everything, and Ashton was like, oh, I really want to throw with you. And Cabrera was like, all right, you know, just give me 5 minutes, I'll be right back, and I'll throw you. And then he came back, and he was like, all right, come on. And he came on the field with Ashton, started throwing with him, giving him ground balls, giving him pop-ups, you know, throwing with him. And then after that, he came over and he took one of his personal bats. He signed it for Ashton and gave it to him. And he brings him into back towards the locker room area where they have that indoor batting cage. He brought Ashton in there. Neil Walker was in there. So he goes up to Walker, and Walker's like, hey, how you doing? And Ashton goes to him, hey, did you see game six of the Penguin Sharks Stanley Cup final?
Wow, man. It's like great stories. And there's also a picture of you there, Aaron and Ashton with the Dark Knight, Matt Harvey. How was that? How long did you guys get a chance to chat with him?
Well, you want to tell the story, Ashton? All right, so Ashton walked up to him. All right, let me set it up here. And Ashton, Matt Harvey's towards the other end of the dugout. Ashton walks up to Harvey. Harvey bends over to him. Now remember, the night before he pitched and he lost to the Braves 5-1, and he's wearing white cleats. So Ashton goes over to talk to him. Harvey bends over. What do you say to that Harvey? Now you're chickening out. So Harvey bends over and Ashton goes to him. Why were you wearing white cleats last night?
Ah, I get it.
That's awesome. What was Harvey's response to that one? I'm sure he had a chuckle.
He didn't know what to say. He just looked at him like, oh, he's like, I don't know. That's a good question.
That's awesome. So you get to do the first pitch, and how was it? I mean, like, wow, all these people, you guys take center stage, and then Ashton throws the pitch to you. How proud were you? Did it sink in there that, like, wow, you know, all the hard work so far, like, sunk in that you guys are there at Citi Field throwing out the first pitch?
I mean, yeah, it was amazing. And I said it to him after. Like, I was hitting him hard balls when he was one. And, I mean, to see it all pay off so early, it was amazing. The story really goes that he told them that he wanted Rene Rivera to catch him. And they were like, no, we want your father to do it. And he was like, oh, okay.
Aww. That's awesome.
People don't understand, honestly, when you see it on TV or even at the ballpark, not only when you're standing on there, especially for Ashton, who's 5 years old, the distance there is between the pitching mound and home plate is ridiculous. And he gave it a good shot. Granted, it was a little bouncer, but you did a good job scooping it up. But still, that's really impressive for a 5-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, it basically bounced right next to home plate. So he basically got it to 60 feet 6 inches, and he got it, you know, close enough where I was able to just easily pick it. I mean, and not only that, but he did it from a normal pitching motion. He did the exact Syndergaard motion where he's from the stretch, he takes that little step to the side, and then pitches it. And like that, so for a 5-year-old to throw it from that distance without, like, you know, trying to heave it, you know, as hard as he can, like from like a running start or like some type of crow hop type thing, like for him to do that from an actual just regular pitching motion, 60 feet 6 inches, and get it there, it was pretty incredible.
Yeah, it looks like all the guys were accommodating, and again, looked like a great time. And you know, Ashton is gonna have memories for a lifetime, and he's only 5 years old, and he can talk. He can say, "Hey, I played catch with these guys," you know, and that's great. And you know, and then after that, you know, you guys took a tour, I guess, MLB Studios, and I think Harold Reynolds was cooperative in getting you there, and you met John Smoltz, and you actually got to throw to Ashton. How was that like?
That was amazing too. Harold Reynolds did set all that up. I got to thank him. He saw us, like, we were in the press dining room. See, like, that's more, I was able to take advantage of certain things because I knew the ballpark already and knew a lot of people from, like I said, from working in the press. So, like, I wasn't just like the average Joe coming off the street, like, you know, bringing in there. Like, I had a lot of contacts within the ballpark. So, like, I was able to bring him in the press dining room, and I knew, like, all the people that, you know, worked in the dining room and all the media people there. So, like, you know, a big shout out to the, you know, the lady Gracie that, like, runs the press dining room there. Like, she was just, she had met Ashton before, so I brought him in, like, in the past, and she, like, loves him. So, like, they were giving him, like, all types of food, and, you know, the next, like, the first time he came in, like, he wanted all these vegetables, and then the next day, like, as soon as he walked in, like, they got him, like bowls of cucumbers and stuff, and they're, like, ready for him right when he walked in. He eats well. He's trained. He's going at it hard. So we go up to the dining room, and we're in there, and then that night that he met everybody was on Fox. So Harold Reynolds was working with Fox that night, and he comes out in the dining room. He picks Ashton up. He's like, "Oh, Mini Thor." He's like, "Oh, I saw you out there with all the players." He's like, "That was amazing." And he goes to me. He's like, "You got to email this lady over at MLB." He's like, "Get him up there." He's like, "You got to get him over there." So I emailed her, and she was like, "Yeah, you can bring him over." So the last day we were, you know, in New Jersey, I brought him over to MLB, you know, before we went home. And he went in there, and they were showing him around, and then they brought him to that mini field. And I'm pitching to him in that, with the wiffle balls and everything. And I'm throwing at him, like, real hard in there. And, you know, he's hitting stuff. And then John Smoltz comes in. And it basically kicked off with Smoltz and McGrain where, you know, we had Ashton in the outfield, and, like, we're throwing all these, like, wiffle balls after him, and he's, like, charging in from the outfield, just, like, scooping it up, like, as clean as can be, and I'm set up at home plate, and he's crumb-hopping and making, like, these perfect throws to the plate, and these guys were like, oh, my God, like, they couldn't believe it. Like, they just couldn't believe the mechanics and how fluid everything was, and then, like, Smoltz threw him this one, and, like, Ashton just went flying and made this crazy diving catch, and Smoltz was like, "God, this kid just keeps upping the bar," and, like, he threw one, like, into the wall, and Ashton, like, crashed into that scoreboard wall, and then after that, Smoltz picks up the bucket of balls, and he starts pitching to him, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm like, he's got a Hall of Famer pitching to him, the greatest thing besides him pitching was, like, Smoltz had, like, a smile from, like, ear to ear, like, the whole time he was pitching it. Like, he was so happy, like, while, like, watching him hit, and, like, he was just so happy watching this whole thing. And afterwards, I'm like, thanks, John. I'm like, thank you so much for pitching to him and everything. And he goes to me, he's like, "No, it's a pleasure to meet you." I'm like, "Get out of here." I'm like,
because, I mean, you've never really seen somebody like Ashton before. I mean, you look at his swing. Even look at the videos back of him, his visit MLB and Smoltz throwing him. You look at his swing, and that's even a national, you know, who maybe he can give the Mets some advice at hitting right now, because he's really keeping an eye on the ball. Where do the mechanics come from that? Because is it just something he's just progressed, or are you kind of teaching the mechanics of?
Hey, man,
you know,
they complimented Ashton, man. We heard the footage afterwards, and they were calling him like a natural. I mean, that, like, it's like naturally in him, and I think part of that too, Aaron, is that, you know what? They see that he's having so much fun. It's just a kid, and it's basically what the game should be about, a kid having fun and enjoying playing baseball, you know?
Yes, exactly. Well, I got to ask you this now. We got to dive into the Mets a little bit. I mean, right now, what's going on with them, dude? They're not able to hit right now. Noah Syndergaard obviously gave up that lead. Matt Harvey last game having issues, you know, with the rain delay. I mean, what's going on with the Mets right now, dude? How do you fix this?
Tough to say.
And you got Jose Reyes back, too. Now he's in the minors.
I'm happy to see Reyes back. He still is hitless in the minors, though. You know, he didn't get a hit in his few games in Brooklyn. They moved him up to Double-A Binghamton last night. He didn't get a hit there. He did score a run, but they actually had some lineup in Binghamton last night. They had Jose Reyes, Juan Lagares, Amed Rosario, and Dominic Smith. Somehow they lost 8-7. But the pitching is just not the same. I mean, Harvey's not the same. DeGrom's not the same. Bartolo is, like, doing great. And, you know, Matt's, gets these little injuries all the time, and Syndergaard was doing great, and now, you know, he's fallen off a little the last couple times. I mean, it's hard to say. He was still throwing 99 the other night, and they just started hitting him.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're stealing on him like crazy. But do you think they can turn it around? I mean, to me, there's a point where you look at the team and you're like, man, just it might not be our year with the injuries, just being plagued with the injuries with Wright and Duda and, you know, with Granderson. Hopefully it's not that bad with the calf injury. But, I mean, luckily it's only five games out, you know, Aaron, and hopefully they can turn around at the All-Star break.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to see Reyes be able to give them something, because they certainly need speed. I mean, they just lack all types of athleticism. I mean, for David Wright right now to be the leader on the team in stolen bases, I mean, that's a good reason why you're not doing so good. I mean, how does the leader on the team have three stolen bases and he hasn't played in, you know, a month and a half or whatever? That doesn't lead to success. But, I mean, I hope Reyes could give him something. I hope he'll be charged up when he gets on the field in New York and everything. I wouldn't mind seeing them sign Gurriel. That'd be nice. But they definitely need production from third base and the corner outfield spots. I mean, those are three power spots where they're getting nothing right now. I mean, something's got to give over there.
Aaron, do you think it's the fact that the offense is struggling that's putting a lot more pressure on the pitching staff, which is why probably they're underperforming? Because normally if you give up two or three runs, theoretically, if you have a good offensive team, it is doable to come back from. Do you think there's more pressure now on the pitching staff, especially guys like Syndergaard, Harvey, DeGrom, to go out there and have to pitch shutouts for seven, eight innings?
I mean, they had to deal with that last year as well. I mean, they pretty much did that the whole time last year, so those guys should be pretty used to it. I mean, DeGrom's not as spot on as he was last year, and he's not hitting those same spots. He's not, you know, staying to the knees, to the corner of the plate like he was before. So that's been hurting him. You know, Harvey is definitely not the same. The offense definitely needs to pick it up. I don't know what the cure for that is right now. I mean, like I said, they need production out of third base and the corner outfield spots, and they need some speed.
Sorry, and you spoke on third base, and so I didn't mean to cut you off there, but that's something I was pretty interested in. Now that, you know, the captain, David Wright's out for the entire year dealing with a neck injury, how much time or how much as a fan or organization do you give David Wright now? Obviously, he's not getting any better. He's dealing with a lot of issues that are plaguing him and are going to continue to plague him. I mean, at what point, if you're the Mets right now, do you say, listen, it's not necessarily cutting your losses, but when is it the point to move on in a way? Because David Wright's not getting any better anytime soon. He's not getting any younger either.
I think they have to move on. I mean, to go from spinal stenosis to now the neck injury, I mean, that's all connected. The neck and the, you know, and the bat and the spine is all one thing. And, I mean, there's no way he's going to get better. I mean, there's no way that after it keeps just getting worse and he keeps getting older, that it's going to get better. It's just not going to happen. It's basically physically impossible. So, I mean, I don't understand why they just don't make him a coach or something.
Do you think he still have a career in the American League as a DH?
No way.
No. He doesn't hit enough like for power now. It's more like a contact guy. So, yeah, it would be tough for him to try to revive a career in the American League. So, you know, it's going to be interesting what happens, though, with David Wright moving forward.
Real quick, I constantly debate Jeff on this over and over again, especially from the Mets in the season last year. Matt Harvey, incredible game five. He wanted to stay in. I want to get your take because you're a diehard Mets fan as well. Do you agree with keeping Harvey in that game? Or if you're a Collins, would you have taken him out? I'm with the debate that you keep him in.
I wanted him in.
You did.
I was yelling, leave him in.
All New York wanted him in, you know what I mean?
I'm old school, so if a guy's got a shutout, I want to see him complete the thing.
And he looks you in the eye and he tells you, I want the ball, you know? You got to go with your horse.
Every time they got a guy who's throwing a shutout and they get to the ninth inning, I'm yelling, leave him in. You know, I'm wrong sometimes, I guess, but I'm old school and I want to see these guys complete the damn thing. So...
And what do you say to those that say, oh, you should have taken him out? What do you say to those people?
You're not a Mets fan. That's what it's about. And again,
I was rooting for you guys. I really was. And this coming from a Yankee fan, I was still rooting for you guys, theoretically, because I still was like, man, if it was any time a better script than that, it would have been that time, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have been good. It definitely would have been really good.
All right, talking to Aaron Gerberg, and of course, son Ashton, who had just probably like a week of a lifetime pitching, playing with the Mets around the first pitch at a Mets game, and then also playing batting with Hall of Famer John Smoltz. Now, like Mini Thor, like he doesn't say dad now. It's Mini Thor to you, dad, right? He's still respectful, and he says dad, and says please, and he hasn't gotten to his head, has it?
Has he got an ego yet?
Has he turned into Matt Harvey?
No, he doesn't. He's been pretty good about it. He's been pretty good about it. He's pretty much himself still. I mean, he does get recognized everywhere, but like just everywhere we go, people have seen him and are recognizing him in different places. And I mean, I've benefited a little bit from it.
Hey, have him say at least bye, whatever, to us, man.
Game on national TV. I see Marlins guy.
Yeah, Marlins guy. Yes, nice. Yes. Well, tell you, Ashton, you are more popular in our eyes than Marlins guy. Okay.
Yeah.
You're awesome, Ashton. Aaron, what can we say, man? It's been an incredible experience for you guys. We're very gracious enough to have you guys on here and talking about it, Aaron. Like I said, I've known you for a while. So is Jeff. Yeah, we miss you, buddy. It's not the same without you here, but I know things are going well for you, and we hope they continue to go well. And I don't think, Jeff, we've seen the last of Mini Thor.
No, I don't think so at all. And hopefully, all the success in the world. And I can tell just the pride that it's coming out in your stories and when you talk about Ashton. So, again, really, really happy for you guys. And, anytime you guys are up here, feel free to let us know when we can do something live.
All right, Glenn, I really appreciate this. And, everything's just been great. And I hope I do get back to New York soon. I mean, the big plus about being down here is the fact that it's warm. And
that's always a plus, yeah.
Yeah, we get to practice all winter long. But in total, like, man, I didn't want to leave New York when I was up there. I hope we do get back more.
Well, keep us posted when you come up anytime soon. We'd love to, like I said, have you on or just catch up, man, because it's been too long since we've seen you.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you guys. It really is.
All right, guys. Enough of this mushy stuff. Throw some pitches to Ashton there. And
he's getting restless.
And continued success. And we apologize for taking up your time to Ashton. Tell him not to hold us against us when he signs his multi-million-dollar deal.
All right, take it easy, Aaron.
Oh, and a lot of thanks goes out to Aaron Gerber, proud papa.
You can see the pride. You see the pride just talking about his son and about the memories he has. Only 5 years old.
Yeah, you heard it in his voice, man. Like, all the experiences that he had. Granted, Aaron's been around it for a while because he's been part of the media. To see his son go through it actually made him more excited than anything. And as you could tell, we had a few moments to talk to Ashton. He was a little shy, and hopefully next time he won't be so shy. You can't blame him, though. Had a great time, too. And it seems like he understands the significance of the moment, too, which is great, especially at 5 years old. And you see everybody talk about how he's a natural and the mechanics. It's just great. Like, we ended on the mere fact that it couldn't happen to a nicer guy like Aaron. And his son really is basically, he's living vicariously through his son right now, because it seems like the sky's the limit for Ashton, the mini Thor.
And I'm telling you, man, there's nothing like, seeing your kid happy, and just, I guess he's just more happy that, his kids gets to live out a dream. And to meet Noah Syndergaard, DeGrom, the Dark Knight, Terry Collins, just the whole Mets organization, the way they treated him with open arms, it's great to see.
A great point you brought up too, Jeff, was the mere fact that all these people are hanging around him, like all the Mets staff, and then going to MLB Network to, pitch around with all the people there. They noticed one thing that we noticed when we saw the video for the first time. It's someone, a kid, that has passion for something and is enjoying the game as it should be enjoyed. Because most of the times we get confused as fans as we grow older, depending how much of a diehard you are, that it's a business. He's loving it for the love of the game. And you see that in Ash, and you hear that in Aaron's voice too. So we couldn't have thanked them enough for coming on, and hope to have him on again next time Aaron's in Jersey, New York City.
And I don't doubt this is the last we hear from Mini Thor.
I very doubt too. I'm looking forward to more videos being posted on Facebook, which I'll repost myself to be one of the millions of people, billions now it seems, to be doing this whole viral thing.
And couldn't be happier for Aaron. So thanks to him, goes out again. So Jeff, next week, we're not only going to have a person, a man, we're going to have a god. The Greek god, Demetrios Papadon, is going to be on the show talking about the indie scene. And in a situation where not a lot of people pay attention to the indie promotion, because from that point on, you know, everything's the whole world to WWE. He's going to talk about the indie scene, what's going on there, and his experiences. He's dealt with the WWE before. So great sitting down and having a chance to talk to him. And you really, for him, we talked about passion for Ashton. You could tell the passion in the voice and how the psychology and all those things that we, you know, as fans take for granted and watch, and a lot of people do. He puts them all together and does a great job talking about it.
A veteran of the independent scene. And, you know, it's great that we're going to mix this in this with Independence Day and the 4th of July, because it is a dream. He's living out the American dream, and his dream is to still be an active wrestler and just doing what he's doing and enjoying it. And again, we talk about his times with, you know, trying to be in WWE and just his advice he would give to younger wrestlers and just his time in the independent scene.
And the great thing about talking to him is Demetrios definitely has the passion, as we have the passion for this, the High Spot Podcast, which you've been listening to. For my tag team partner, Jeff Martin, one member of the Jersey Wrecking Crew, I am Brian Berga. I bid you all adieu, and we'll see you guys next time.
Happy 4th of July, because it'll be too sweet.